thank you for your question, Mr. Is there anything you kept on going down in that budget? And that's why we said, oh, I'm so willing to you just disappear from the first person downwards. But we will take it, you are supposed to be here. You will not intrude us. You did not get credit.
Program that was put in place a new student plan 3 public universities and 50 deputy colleges throughout the country. The program sample about is underway. So therefore, Chairperson, this morning we'll present to you two programs as we indicated, and we thank you very much for that, for allowing us.
Equal was 188 and 194, and going into 13-14, that shift is going to start taking place, where we are assisting more students at different colleges and universities. Just on program one, the strategic objectives, and program one, I'll briefly take the committee through the strategic objectives for program one, the assessment indicators, and the budget allocated for each of the strategic objectives. Strategic objective 1.1 is NSFAS to improve governance and to comply with government legislation and regulations. And the indicator is the strategic plan target is we want to have 100% compliance with key legislation and a strategic budget of 30.3 million for that strategic objective. 1.2 is to ensure that each functional unit at NSFAS has got a policy and procedure manual so that individual roles and delegations are firmly instilled. And our target is to have a complete procedure manual and competent and capable staff to support the new operating model. So set aside 7.1 million rand for that objective. Objective 1.3, Jefferson, is to improve the governance system and to provide smooth transition from the old to the new policy framework. This is mainly to make sure that the network transformation program runs smoothly, and we've set aside 7 million rand for that objective. Objective 1.4 is to integrate the new policy into the performance management framework so that executive management and employees of NSFAS are accountable for delivering on the policies. And the objective is to have that new framework, and we've set aside 2.6 million rand for that. Objective 1.5 is to ensure that staff have the appropriate skills and competence today to fulfill its vision and mission, and we've set aside 9 million rand for that. Objective 1.6 is an objective that is in the 5-year strategic plan, but it has now been achieved. Therefore, no budget has been set aside for that objective in the current financial year. Objective 1.7 is to develop a skilled and trained workforce to provide sustainable delivery, and we've set aside 500,000 for that objective. Objective 1.8 is also part of the strategic plan, achieved in the prior year already. No budget set aside for that development of an IT reference architecture. Objective 1.9 is to procure and implement and improve IT system for efficient and effective delivery of services. The target is to have a new functional law management system, set aside 41 million rand for that objective. Richard will speak into detail about what we're doing in terms of the procurement of the IT systems and the transformation program. Objective 1.10 is to develop and implement processes and procedures for a new operating model to ensure that NSFAS fulfills its mandate to students and the stakeholders, and to set aside 500,000 for that objective. On program 2, chapter 10, objective 2.1 is to improve marketing and communication to support students and prospective students. The strategic target is to have a registered marketing sales provider appointed and a new media program implemented. This is important in order to be able to reach the students before they actually go to universities or FET colleges. We've set aside 9.7 million rand for this. And objective 2.2 is where the bulk of NSFAS funding goes to, is to develop a student value proposition to serve the student needs more effectively. This is where loans and bursaries are dispersed. The budget set aside is 8.1 billion for that objective 2.2. Strategic objective 2.3 is to create a central application process through regional offices and other appropriate channels of delivery. And the strategic target is to have an operational central application process at 500,000. 2.4 is to raise new funding for undergraduate study and for targeted student programs, including the missing middle. And the strategic plan target is to increase the funding that is available for funding students by 4 billion. So, 260,000 just for the research on the funding of the missing middle. 2.5 is to maximize the recovery of outstanding loans from all eligible debtors employed in both the formal and informal sectors. This is a program where we chase people that owe NSFAS money. The strategic plan target is to have recoveries of 1.5 billion, and the 2015 target is recoveries of 600 million. and we've set aside a budget of 9.2 million rand for that purpose. 2.6 is develop a new program for unfunded courses of study, mainly the BTEC, and we set aside 278,000 to conduct the analysis and the research as to where that funding sources could be coming from. And strategic objective 2.7 is to develop a new product for specific targeted student segment, especially in the FET space, and we set aside 100,000 for that research program. The strategic objective, Chairperson, I will step out and, into the loans and bursaries budget specifically as to what we have for loans and bursaries and the sources of the funding for loans and bursaries. The first part of the slide, Chairperson, is the funding that comes from the Department of Higher Education and Training and associated institutions. The general allocation that is allocated to all the students' budget is 2.7 billion for 13-14. The final year program that the president announced last year, where we fund final year students and convert their loans to bursaries when they pass all their courses and qualify to graduate, was set aside 1.1 billion this year. The teacher education is 106,000. Funding, no, 106 million, sorry, just the numbers are big. Sorry. The teacher, 106 million, the students with disabilities, it's 66 million that is set aside. The partnership program that we run with the Institute of Social Accountants was set aside 5 million for that. Truth and Reconciliation, funding for victims from the TRC is 4.7 million. FET College Bursaries is 1.98 billion. The funding for National Skills Fund, mainly for the skills, is 450 million. For the Rishaga Bursaries, that's the Bursary Fund to run on behalf of the Department of Basic Education for teacher education, is 893 million. And there's funding that some of it still has not been finally confirmed by the funders. There's social work salaries, Department of Agriculture and Forest and Fisheries. We also run the Better Fund for the Eastern Cape Provincial Government. We run various non-governmental organization funding and some of the features which we are still working on confirmation of the final numbers. Currently, we've got numbers confirmed up to 7.6 billion, and the budget number is about 8.2 billion. Just on the administration, focusing on the compensation of employees, we're budgeting to spend 52 million rand on compensation of employees, and on goods and services, we're budgeting to spend 72 million. The reason for that decrease from the previous year to this year is because in the previous year, we've budgeted for most of the amounts that are required to kickstart the transformation program, and that expense line is beginning to reduce. Payments for capital assets was budgeted at 5.2 million, and that comes out 230 million rand. That takes me through to the strategic plan of the Student Financial Aid Scheme and the budget that has been set aside to achieve those objectives. Chairperson, with your permission, I will hand over to Richard to put the committee on the progress made on the transformation program.
Thank you. Over to Richard.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, Chairperson, Deputy Minister, members of the committee, invited guests of the committee, and my colleagues. What I shall do is just take you through the transformation program, first of all, starting with some background to the transformation program. The reasons for the transformation really is driven by two factors. The increasing growth that NSFAS has experienced since its inception nearly 21 years ago, and the fact that systems and policies and structures haven't kept pace with that. To give you an indication of that, growth has been in the last 5 years from 441 million to 8.2 billion in 2013. And if you look at the funding, 3.1 billion for 191,000 students in 2009 to 8.2 billion for over 400,000 students in 2013. And I mean, just looking at the trends and looking at the ministerial view of this is that the growth will continue, certainly in the area of FET colleges. And the reality is that NSFAD structures, policies and systems haven't kept pace with this massive growth. In 2010, the AG disclaimer of opinion, part of that being that the existing loan management system was outdated and inadequate. And just to give you an indication, that system is the same system that JESSA started up with nearly 20 years ago. And over the 15 years, it's been added to and passed on to, and just hasn't kept pace not only with technology, but just the ability to manage the product set the NSFAT is currently distributing. The other reality of the NSFAT organization is that we don't really get to see our students because we, until after the time they've completed their studies, the reason behind this is that the financial aid officers basically control the process, and that's the financial aid officers of the universities and colleges. They control the process until the point that the student is exited. And what's happened really over a period of time is that on the 73 different campuses, the 23 universities and the 50 colleges, which spread over 344 campuses countrywide, there's basically 344 different ways of producing an application for funding for NSFAD students. And so what's happened is the process has become deeply flawed over a period of time. It's evolved. And it's given rise to practices such as the upfront payment of 30% of the funding allocation to a university or college, simply to get them through the first few months while students are applying and they're required to provide services. What we've also found through our research to various institutions is evidence of inefficiency, fraud, corruption, and a system where we've got all applicants being means tested. That creates a huge inefficiency in terms of the process where learning, including those at quintile 1, quintile 2 schools, people who are in receipt of child grants, are all being means tested, which doesn't make sense that if someone's coming from a quintile 1 school, the implication is that they shouldn't be means tested. So there's a great deal of inefficiencies in the system. To a certain point that NSFAD has no direct relationship with the students until they exit, and sometimes the first telephone conversation the student has with NSFAD is 1 year after exiting when we agree a payment schedule with them. Up to that point, the relationship has been held not with the schools but with the FAO offices. And it's made it really difficult for us to establish a relationship and get our loan funding back, which can then be used for funding the next generation of students. The collection policy is impacted by a lack of having contact with the students. The reality is that the old systems don't manage the information or facilitate reporting, so we find it very difficult to get information that's relevant to getting paid back, taking policy decisions based on factual information surrounding the student population. And the reality is that the 8.1 billion is not enough to go around the number of students who would be eligible for funding. And so consequently what's happened is that various positive practices that have emerged from those practices being that the institutions ignore the means test and they top slice applications to make a smaller amount go further. And whilst this gives access for students to get into the universities and colleges, the reality is if they don't have enough money to get them through the year, there's a high percentage of them dropping out before completing their studies, and most of those in the first year. So it completely hinders the principle of success. To give an indication of how big the challenge is for funding in the sector, we asked universities to give us a number for the number of students that were registered but weren't funded by NSFAS. And we were very surprised when this number came back at around 3 billion after having gone around various institutions and understand it could be significantly higher, because a lot of the institutions provided a statistic which was based on applications that they practiced the means testing on, not all applications. So clearly, if by way of background, we offer them two products, one being the loan product, which is typically our 60-40 loan, which is where the portion of the loan is converted to a bursary based on successful completion of courses, and also the 100% bursary of 5 years where the full loan is converted to a bursary. And then the bursary product, which is typically offered to the FET college students. So if I'm going to identify our customer as the student, we recognize that we need to have the first points of contact with the student, and the first point of contact is NSFAT Direct, and you'll see that at the bottom of the second chevron. NSFAT Direct is a web-based application form that a student will be able to register their application, indicate which universities or colleges they wish to study and the course of study that they wish to take on. It will also be supported by our contact center. The student will be able to make contact through NSFAT's contact center and complete an application. We recognize, however, that the financial aid officers and the student support officers will continue to play a fundamental part in the model. And we recognize that would be one of our channels to market, and we would be looking to the universities and colleges to give us a great deal of support, especially through a transition period where the financial aid officers would carry out some of the services that the NSFAT would be providing. We recognize as well that we should be broadening the scope of the intermediated officers to service delivery centers, regional offices of the DF where we'd have a walk-in facility, the post office where we have 2,300 branches countrywide that would be able to assist applicants in completing application forms, and obviously working with the Department of Basic Education, access in the schools, which makes it that much easier to identify past the channels above where the students in the final year of study can then make an application directly. What we recognize as well means to the third chevron that we have to be open and accessible to all students wherever they may be in South Africa. And we recognize that we're going to have a number of interaction mediums available, that being paper, fax, email. Also, mobile phones here being an increasing method of communication where we can send SMS messaging to students and learners and get information on the status of their application forms, etc. So a lot of the current queuing that takes place at universities and colleges can be avoided by just providing information to learners and students. We recognize as well that one of the interaction medium channels is going to be the financial aid offices and the regional offices going forward, as well as our contacts and call centers for inbound and outbound communications. Now, clearly, a lot of the calls have been handled by SIOs at the moment, and the NSFAT, as part of the transformation program, is having to get this contact center to be able to handle a much higher volume of inquiries and queries from learners and students. The final portion of the interaction medium, as you'll see there, is system integration, and that system integration will be to provide our systems at the intermediary, so to make the financial aid officers have access to our systems, as well as post office, etc., to have access to the NSFAT systems and the banking process applications. But also the system integration through to third parties within government, for example, the Department of Home Affairs, to validate ID and name. We're finding a lot of false applications being made where both parents are claimed to be dead, and we have affidavits to the extent that they're staying with a guardian or grandparent to avoid the means test. And what we'll be able to do now is to access Department of Home Affairs information tool both validate the individual as well as the individual's parents and or guardians, and allow us to have a picture of their siblings who may be studying. So I think a lot of these interfaces will ensure Torbert alluded to is a fully fledged financial services system. Now, whilst we're obviously not a financial services organization, we do provide the services that a bank or an insurance company would provide. And the systems that we've prepared give us the full range of functionality that you would expect to have in a bank system, for example. At the heart of that, what you see on the diagram in front of you is a number of boxes. Those boxes represent the functionality within the system. And then on the top right-hand corner, you'll see a number, and I shall talk those through sequentially. At the heart of it is the interoperability layer, which is the glue that allows these various systems to talk to each other, and also allows the NIFTAS to talk to the Department of Home Affairs, SARS, Departments of Basic Education, SACA, to get information that will support the application process and validate the application process. So you'll see on the right-hand side of that the third-party interfaces to external providers. The second component is effectively the banking system, which is the student loans and bursaries management system, and that will hold the details of the student, the loan amount, the bursary amount, calculate the interest, issue the statement, and manage the loan and bursary through the life of the relationship with an assets. The third component you'll see on the bottom right-hand side is the business process management and business rules processing component, and what that allows us to do is, based on a series of rules that we predefine, it will allow us to manage by exception and allow straight-through processing. Now, there's a lot of technical words there, but effectively what it means is, based on some rules, instead of having to check something, the system will automatically check it, and as long as it meets certain criteria, we'll then pass it on to the next stage in the processing. So we can have visibility at all stages of what applications we've received, and we can manage by exception. So we don't have to go through every single one. So, for example, if we made as a rule that if you have SATA funding, and we can validate that your ID to the SATA database, it might automatically process you to the next stage. So that's what the business process management and rules processing engine does. The fourth component, also on the bottom right-hand side, is the content management, and what that allows us to do is hold all of the paper, all of the emails, all of the conversations that relate to a student in one place, so that when we deal with a student through our contact center, we have the full picture of everything that's happened. We have a copy of the loan agreement, we have any calls, we have any emails that are relevant to that student, all in one place. So the student-centered model makes sure that we've got that kept online. The fifth component on the left-hand side is our financial management system. There we will retain our existing accounting system, and there's no changes there. The sixth component is probably the most important component for us, which is the data warehouse. And what the data warehouse allows us to do is, through that interoperability layer in the middle, is to put information from all of those systems to provide us the full picture of what's happening within the NISPAF. So it will allow us to slice and dice the information to know who we've been funding, what courses they've been funded, what pass rate was at those institutions, where the applications came from, all of those kind of slice and dice questions we'll be able to answer through the data warehouse. The seventh component, which is in the middle on the right-hand side, is EFT payments, which allows us to make payments to the institutions, and the payments to institutions will be for fees and residence, where it's paid directly to the university or college, or for allowances, in some cases, which will be paid directly to students. The eighth component is the mechanism through which we will distribute funds where it's appropriate to distribute them to students, and that's typically for accommodation, meals, transport, and books. And that will be managed through a funds distribution system with two organizations' point-of-sale systems. And what that means in layman's terms is that we'll be distributing money to students via vouchers to their cell phones. Those cell phone vouchers will be exchanged at merchants who are approved by NISPAF as accredited vendors. So we envisage through the system, so for example, a book merchant, let's take a book merchant on campus will be an accredited merchant. We have an agreement with them that says you will only supply books to students who are NISPAF students based on the voucher. You won't supply them with anything outside of those categories. You know, you won't be able to give them cell phones, or it'll only be books. The student will then, using the voucher, make payments at the point of sale of the book merchant, and the transaction will then be concluded. We envisage giving the students, for example, in meals and accommodation, a monthly voucher, so that the vouchers will then serve them through the year of study, and that we can be sure that they've actually got the funds available to them through the year of study to support themselves, and that will also apply in the case where they have accommodation and transport. The ninth component is around our portal, and the portal is really just the web front end that allows both the FIOs, post office, schools, and other access to the, all the systems that run behind it. That's really a web front end. And then the last component is the contact, call central contact center. And the contact center we're designing in such a way that it will allow inbound telephone conversations, outbound telephone conversations, but we also recognize for students that most of them are on prepaid, and they don't want to use the prepaid inbound. So we'll give facilities to make contact with the NISPAS through SMS, through Mixer, through those social media channels, and we'll respond to them through those channels as well. So the system we're putting in place is a very comprehensive system, which will cover all of the aspects that we need to support the student-centered model. And the system gives us a number of benefits. Just on the next slide. So first of all, the first benefit gives us a centralized means test, and it also allows us to use that centralized means test to test the data against these various databases, databases that I've talked about, home affairs, social development, fertile. So it allows a great deal of rigor in the application process, ensuring that the funding, in fact, goes to those students who deserve it. It gives us one standardized process, and the fact that the matter is at the moment we're dealing with about 344 different processes, and it's giving rise to a great deal of anomalies in the system. The fact that you standardize the process doesn't mean that there will be obviously a period of alignment. We will have to make sure that all of the universities and colleges buy into this new process, are trained on the new process and align their systems to the new process, but at least it will give us then consistency. It will also give alignment with the admissions and registrations procedures across all the universities and campuses, and so that will then pave the way for the centralized admission system. It will give visibility to funding learners and returning students very early in the process, and the reason being is that we will allocate funds based on the cost of funding that Missouri's this rate will base. We will allocate funding to students quite early on in the process and notify universities and colleges that that funding has been available, made available to them, and that those students, should they be accepted by the university or college, would be funded by NISPAS. So it will help the universities and colleges in their financial planning. The fact that the allowances will also be centralized will take a great deal to create another system to help prevent fraud and help us to detect where the system is being misused. We'll have full details of where the students have been spending their cell phone-based allowances, how much they've been spending, which merchants they've been spending it at. So, for example, if we see a student at University of Western Cape spending their money in Limpopo, we would ask the question why they're spending their money in the Pardale warehouse to be able to give us that kind of information. So it will give us a great deal of improved governance over the entire distribution of this $8.2 billion and provide an audit trail, an end-to-end audit trail of all the funds that have come in, all the funds that have gone out to students through allowances or tuition fees back to the colleges. The student-centered model also will ensure that funding reaches the intended beneficiaries, so the system does away with the concept of top slicing because we will fully fund the student. The system will also, through the data warehouse, give us a great deal of information which will assist us in placing students in careers going forward. So we'll be able to develop partnerships to link the financial aid to work experience, skills development, and employment because we'll have visibility of which students are coming through the systems who've completed which qualifications. Chairman, thank you very much. I think that concludes my presentation.
So, but this is what we're presenting to you this morning, our annual performance plan and budget for 2013-2014 and the transformation program. And I must say that we are so confident with the program that we have embarked on going forward. Over to you, Chairperson.
General. So whatever you are doing, the office
annual performance plan is reflective of the strides that NSPAC is making. We are working very close to them, as you know. And I think at the department, really, we have managed to augment the NSPAC allocation in a big way. But the demand is increasing. I'm happy that they have embarked on a program that seeks to deal with all the anomalies that previously existed, be it on the on issues of compliance insofar as the minister is concerned, on issues of corruption, fraud, and mismanagement of the funds. There is a clear program. We are happy with this program, and I'm sure members would be appreciative of the kind of strides that they have since embarked on, because really the intention is to ensure that these resources or this money does reach the intended recipients or beneficiaries. And so I think the support of the Select Committee, given all the challenges that are there, because you know wherever we go, we are always questioned, or rather the reputation of NSFAS is almost at stake. But I think given these strides and where we come from and the demand that is there, really with the little that they have, they are trying. But where they are not doing their work, will obviously alert the, will be the first ones to alert the Select Committee to ask the difficult questions. But from where we're sitting, they are doing a great job. That would be my comment, really, Chair. But of course, we'll you know, listen to the members and take whatever suggestions which will indeed assist in enriching this program, so that we take it further and we ensure that our young people in particular do access opportunities in the post-school system. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Good evening, Minister. This is time for questions, members. I've got only three hands. Four, five. Oh. Okay. I was my. That's the problem. I will take it from this end. Yeah? Of course. Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, we must just commend the NSFAS for what we hear as we go around about the improvements in your services and all. And maybe taking it from there, that you presented, you really said that you will go to all the schools if possible. And we would really want to encourage that, because most of our learners in schools don't know about this service, that they can actually access it deep there in the rural area. So we must make sure that those in the offices that are, you said district or you regionally, make sure that they do the work and go to the schools and inform the learners about how they can access this. Because most learners only apply after they got the results. And that is where the problem is. They say NSFAS doesn't want to help us because they must do it before, if you understand. So there's a need for you to go there. Now, the other thing that we picked up was that sometimes the transfers are made very late to the institutions, and now they are rollovers. What do you do with that situation? What do you do to avoid such a situation, or what do you do? In the Auditor General this year, this report of 2011-2012, there was an issue of compliance that was raised, that you you don't, there was a lack of, I don't know whether it was not fully done or there was no compliance, I forgot, but I did read the report, compliance with the supply chain management. Have you jumped to that level? Are you okay now with that? The next one is on the voters. Well, it's okay. You're talking of voters for accommodation, for transport, for books. But are we very sure about the real usage of these voters? Do we have mechanisms that will say really this kid is receiving these voters and he's using it for the right? For the right reasons, and are the beneficiaries really the people who really need these voters? Are they the needy that shall have this? Because some of these lenders will apply and be successful, and then come up with other, you know, means to get money, and then, you know, as we have the needy children who really need this thing. So do institutions assist you in trying to monitor really whether those beneficiaries are deserving? Lastly, the companies that you said you are running behind people to bring back the money. What is the text to those that are still unemployed? How sure are you that the people you are running after are really employed and they must bring back the money? Because it must be brought, yes, we agree, and so that it's able to assist in paying this for the scheme to be sustainable. But my worry is some of them don't get employed and they take years. Or do you have a plan to assist those who have qualified through this NEFSAS? Are you able to assist them to get jobs, to be placed somewhere, so that they can also help you in paying back the money? Let me go up to the chairperson for now. Thank you. Honorable Tom.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Thank you for the opportunity to be with us. My first one may be getting back where Member Moroto left off on the recovery from the universities. Let me say, you took the list, let me say that, because the minister has been very vocal of this list on the recovery of debts. You are saying in the explain alternative means of for collecting money and debt are tracking is needed to improve the recovery of money, which they say you seem and not having the means or mechanism of ensuring that you do the recovery. So currently, what is the system that you're using? Is it the system? You wait until the lender is employed. How soon do you start to collect your money? And the second one is, you are saying in your first name, there is a problem of capacity. And God, listening when you're introducing yourself, I guess the gentleman there saying I'm very bad in recalling names, but he says he is a chief executive. Chief executive. And then saying, explain, you're saying there is a capacity issue because of the absence of the CEO and the CFO. You have still got to turn around strategy. the set of the level, if you are from the non-secretary school, isn't it? You can't just buy books and factor in the traveling cost and the accommodation. People will move from Lubeke City to Gauteng.
Trust me.
that the funds given to NGOs are used accordingly.
For the skilled and capable workforce to be trained, the allocation of 9.075 million. Can you give us the information how many staff members will be included into this allocation to be trained? There's a difference between the allocation of bursaries between the institutions and also NSFAS, especially in connection with the amount given to students for food, accommodation, transport and books, etc. Now my question here is, why is there a difference between the structure of the bursary from the institution and the structure of the bursary from NSFAS? And what are you, do you have any plans in connection with this, just to make that sure? Because when you, as a student from an institution, the benefits, I think, is not so much applicable, especially when you come from a poor area. There's always that need of funds. And then the other thing is also in connection with the distribution of the loans and the bursaries. The time is delivery on the bursaries, the money on the bursaries and the loans to the institutions when the students are actually going to the administration to receive their funds to use it as applicable. So from some institutions, especially I can mention in the Western Cape, I know about some students where they wait till the middle of the quarter before they receive that money to pay for their books and other certain things at the university in the Western Cape, and also in the further education and training colleges in the Western Cape. Can you give us that information? Are you aware of those things here and also in other institutions? And what are you currently doing to follow it up so that the next term allocation of the funds won't have that same problem? Then there's a shortfall, and I picked up the shortfall from NSFAS. There will be a shortfall of, I think, 30%. What will you do to up that one, or to enable you to pay that shortfall? And then in connection with the money received in provinces from NSFAS, usually there are some provinces who don't have the administration to handle this. So at the end of the year or during the time when the funds are actually audited, then we pick up that there's some problems in that certain province or provinces. Now, what plans do you have in place actually to stop or to curb that situation? It is not good just to follow it up when auditing the money. You must actually follow it up right through the year where you can see where is the loopholes and also where the shortfall in provinces and spending that money. Can you just supply us that information? And the last one, Honorable Chairperson, is in connection with funds to the NGOs. The same question in this relation to provinces, also to the NGOs. I hope the last one is clear. I don't want to elaborate on the last one because it's the same as the previous one.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
It looks like it's clear to them, not to me, the chairperson, but to the people
okay.
that you are asking the question.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I must also congratulate the MSFAS for the outstanding work of dispersing or distributing the funds to institutions. My colleagues have raised so many questions. I still have them as well. But I just need to share the frustration, Chair, which I discussed it with the chair of the Select Committee and actually discussed with her and said she must actually intervene. I want just to present the case study that is happening in one area in the Northwest Province, in what do you call it? FETs. The students receive bursaries. When the student later in the school, the school institutions who take the students look for friends who've got guest houses. And they're not so effective guest houses. You know, guest houses are similar businesses. Now they convert guest houses to accommodate students. And we understand the nature of the rooms of the guest house, very small. They will pick about 5-6 students in one room. They sleep like in the floor, up and down, and so on and so on. I have my frustration with the chances. This situation is not correct. Even the kitchen that they use, sometimes there's no electricity, they must run around, ask for money in the street, buying food and all those things, because they can't cook. And the queue in the kitchen is it's massive. So that frustration, I want to record it. That I share it with the chair of the committee that they must go and look into this situation. And I gave the committee the names of the guest house, which are converted to. The other point is this voucher for transport. Students who are traveling in a kilometer of 30 kilometers from the school are given this voucher to travel. Sometimes they don't get and they don't go to school. Then we've got that problem. We understand it was saying from a distance between Tsuseng and Westerberg is about 30 kilometers. And students get frustrated if they don't receive that voucher and they don't go to school. And I will give you a scenario. Some food that comes in are about, from the school is about 5 kilometers. In a farm, there's a township, there was a farm on the other side of the township. That the institution used this farm as they bought it for agricultural purposes. So it got an accommodation. Students from that side are given an accommodation, but they don't have transport to go to school. Sometimes they walk to school, sometimes they don't go to school at all. Now they get mixed up in the township and do nasty things. I accept the frustration of the chair, I'm sharing it with you. I'm sharing it so that I must ask, what is the plan or mechanism that you put in place to ensure that they do the undue misuse of this system is not continuing? Because some of the entities, I have not gone to universities because I have seen it in entities which do not have accommodation, that this problem really exists. The other point that I wanted to say, which I had a lot of discussion among student movements and student body politics about the use of these ways interchangeably in the support of students, deserving students. They will go back and say, you see, the deserving students are the students who've got good work. Other than how deserving are those who come from the poor background, the socio-economic poor background. So this thing is also creating problems. Can the minister at least unpack it for us to understand who actually is the deserving student? He is deserving or eligible on the basis of his socio-economic stand or this is the levels. The four digit levels of students. Just clarify us. What is it? Is it a total that has been said in schools that the number of levels has been taught on 60-40 basis, or what is this 60-40? And that is the last one, Chair, is the conversion of a bursary or a loan to a full bursary at the end of a term or the end of a duration of the course. Right? But what I want to find out, I have to say, level, again, you know that qualification, level student would then be converted to. So you're not converting all the loans or all the loans to bursaries. You're going to selectively, but that would be the criteria of actually making sure that this one is flexible and this one is deserving. So that is the area that I think the National School actually explained to us, so that we must at least understand who of the students will actually be converted to a full bursary and who is not. In terms of that. And the last one is on the what is the thing? The loan. The other one is on the loan. Now the loan book, they say they're going to put a certain amount of money to make sure that they're going to train those students who owe them the loan. So what I want to check from them is the issue that we have in Eastern Cape when we went to that university, the students were complaining that most of their grades were blacklisted and they find it very difficult. Is that issue of blacklisting students being sorted out, or is it that the students are blacklisted? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable. I just want to ask a general question of middle income. For the middle income earners, do you have a provision or a program or a strategy that you intend in future or now for the middle income earners? The second one is on this voucher issue that the other members have spoken about. Do you have a system to track down a student that you are giving this voucher? Students are always they are always think they are clever than everybody else, for as long as they are students, until they come to workplaces and they find out that I'm the critic. They think that they are better than clever than everybody else. These students are in the university school.
Was
actually be used for salaries. And it was the same thing at Transparency. But these are all the wrong things, because as I said earlier, and as the chair indicated, that these monies must really reach the intended beneficiaries. And so we are doing a lot to try and mitigate this kind of problems. As a way of intervention, really, as you would know, that through the SAICA program, we have brought in qualified chartered accountants with working together with SAICA to try and manage the financial systems in our colleges. I think through this intervention, these anomalies will be addressed, where money is spent on the intended programs, and it's not diverted really to any other thing, because really our experience is that once this money is paid upfront, the colleges would then use their own discretion to divert that to infrastructure, to salaries, to everything else. So we hope that the intervention that we have since embarked upon of bringing qualified people in the area of accountancy working outside will help us to deal with some of these problems. The CFOs in these colleges, and we are happy with the work that they are doing thus far. There is nothing that has been alarming since they were brought closer to the FET space, but I'm sure the chair and the MSOF team will respond to the other questions. But in relation to your experience in these two colleges, it was really a wrong thing for the colleges to divert this money to other programs. We are investigating the matter, and those obviously who will be found wanting will have to account on why they could do such a grave injustice as we see it, because it meant that many young people are unable to access this kind of assistance that government is actually bringing to them. So we are monitoring this situation. We spoke at length about mismanagement, about fraud, about corruption, and as the chair and the team outlined, that there are now mechanisms and programs that we've since embarked upon to try and deal with this kind of problem, just so that there is proper compliance and that our young people they really receive this money. So that they thrive in the higher education space. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister. I just want to urge the members not to interrupt the speaker, because it's us who ask the question. So we must listen to the responses, please, and not interrupt the speaker. Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Deputy Minister. Over to the next person.
I think, first of all, there is no question regarding you of applauding the strides that we've made as NSPAS going forward. I hear from the honorable members. I think we accept and we are so happy that our election in the Select Committee Education and Recreation, especially the numbers that are coming from various provinces, because we know that these first offices might be here in Cape Town, but the impact must reach all out. So when we hear you saying this, knowing that we started this journey in a very short space of time, we embark on it from 2011, and this is 2013, and indeed, we are really trying to go fast, because the issue of education of our children
is so important. I think that that is very much important to hear from this committee. The questions, the Department of Education and Training is also represented here. There are also questions that they are going to respond to in all the questions that have been asked here. But from where I sit as the chairperson of the Board of NSFAF, I think I must pick up the question that was raised by Honorable Mnube in terms, only in terms of capacity of NSFAF. Maybe the position of Msula, he didn't articulate it very clearly. In general, he is our CEO. Now, in terms of NSFAF, we refer to the CEO as executive officer. So, we are going to be ahead in terms of management. So, he is our CEO, he is our executive officer. We appointed him with effect from the 1st of February, and he is doing that work. In the document, it might have been the space where he was not there yet, but we have got that. But also, with the executive officer, we have got the chief information officer. We're talking of a huge technology that we are buying, but the leader of that technology at executive level is this. Professor Peter is the Chief Information Officer. She is leading that particular side. And also, members have picked up that recently we advertised the post of the CFO. But I must say that before Msula became our Executive Officer or CEO, he was our CFO. Remember the time I came? Yes. I came with a CEO and a CFO. And then Msula is the executive officer. And then we are in the process of filling the position of the CFO. We have done that post and then we are going to finalize it soon. We don't have a huge job organogram. So more than 50% of what we have currently is filled up. So at the top, we are not worried much about this particular capacity. But I think you are also correct. Next part, because of this centralized system that we're going to, it's going to be not only more than double its size, it will be more than 3 times its size. So we are busy recruiting people to join the NSFAF. I must speak on the question that Honorable has been put forward in terms of the central application process. Where are we at this point in time? I think we are happy that already we have got the new management system, because our program, as it was presented there, was to buy the new technology to drive the electricity. So we bought that and we are busy implementing it right at NSFAF as we speak right now. We know that we went out to a huge tender and that is being implemented with our head, and therefore the process is underway and is going on. Now, we are busy engaging all stakeholders. There are so many stakeholders. The 23 public universities that I was talking about and the 50 city colleges that I was talking about, the student organization, so we are engaging. That is why we couldn't wait, and we are happy when you agree with us that we also wanted to include selecting this transformation program at this moment. It's another form of consultation and make sure that we are on track with all our stakeholders in terms of implementing this new model. But I would say that we are also piloting this new model at the home, at the University of the Western Cape, because we think that instead of just rolling out to all the university, we must start from somewhere and make sure that we can answer all the questions in terms of what are the challenges that will be there. So we are already engaging with the University of the Western Cape, but also on the FET College side, we are looking at quite a number of FET colleges. That's very close here, so that we can monitor the situation before rolling out. But we are working on very tight things, because as soon as we complete this technology that are busy with. We want to roll it out very soon. But now I'm going to hand over to Ms. Sulwa to unpack and share the questions with the rest of the team.
Thanks, Chair. I will try and answer as many questions as possible. Richard would answer all the questions that relate to the payment of student vouchers in the old system and in the new system. I just wanted to deal with this payment system so that the members are clear how the system is going to work and we bring confidence. I'll ask my colleagues from the department to deal with the issue of accommodation. I think that's something that the department has dealt with thoroughly. I will then deal with the other questions. I was hoping when all the members were heaping praise on this first time, there would be a few questions. It does not appear to be so, but
what's the problem is that you've got some questions also.
If we don't know where you are, of course we'll look for you. But once we look for you and we find that you're unemployed, we say, sorry, we're not looking for you, we're looking for the guy next door who's working. Because how the system works, if we're employed, we will not bring up people that are not employed. But also, in terms of what we're doing to assist some of the people that are unemployed, we're currently working with the sitters as an aspect. In fact, we're handling some of their funding and the sitters. And the sitters, the advantage of the sitter funding, it comes with work placement. If a wholesale and retail sitter, for instance, all the students that they are funding are guaranteed work placement in the retail sector, and that's one of the things that we're doing to partner with organizations that are already doing placement of students. On testing, what system do you use? I've said we're not blacklisting, but we use various mechanisms in terms of trying to check where the potential people that can pay us are. We use the one of the key access that we have is on the SAS system. We must thank the legislators for giving us access through the DAC system and the DAC Administration Act. We've got access to some information on the SAS system to know where the person is working, and then we can go to the employer and look for so-and-so. And also we've got access to the NASA's Treasury personal system. We've got access to that system to be able to know whether people are working in the state payroll. But we're also working with starting with the state institutions now. Some of the major state organizations, we're working with their executive teams to give them data, because we've got the data from staff to know whether people are working. And now we're going to the executives and say, we know that you've got 1,700 people in your payroll that owe us money. This is our decision. We're now trying, we've also employed a full-time person now that deals with debt collection and coverage. So this is not about NSFAS trying to be the best cop. It's about trying to assist the current students, because if you don't collect 600 million rand this year, it means there is a couple of students that are in school that we can't ban, because we could not collect the 600 million rand. One of the questions that was also permeating almost to all the members, one of the members, was the question around NGOs. How do you work with NGOs? And it's something that we have identified as one of the legal arrangements. And I must say that some of the NGOs have been very good in terms of the assistance that they offer the students. So those students not only get money, but they also get outside assistance to be able to succeed. And because these NGOs, some of them, they work behind the students. It's easy for them to go and visit the students during the year. Rather than NSFAS, who's working with 400,000 students, who will all not be in the office at NSFAS if people go and visit all the students. Some of the NGOs have assisted in terms of working with the students, they giving assistance to the students. But part of the problem is a system problem, and that's why Richard is talking about how we're changing the system. And the system problem is, in as much as we give rules to all these agencies that work for us, and the agencies are mainly the universities and the city colleges, in as much as we give rules, they bring the rules and they interpret them in their own way. And that's part of the reason for centralization, that we've now got to a point where we have heard enough of the misinterpretation of the rules. There must be central rules. The funding of students must be centralized. But also I must say, out of the 8 billion rand of funding, there's only 10 million rand that is allocated to NGOs. So about 10 million rand in this year that is allocated to NGOs. It's not a big pool, and we want to continue to monitor it where the NGOs are not performing. That's an assurance. Because we don't want to compartmentalize this fund. This is a national fund, and it must remain as that. It must not have different rules in different corners. It must have a uniform set of rules for the whole country. The other sources of funding, and to confirm in the slides, the other sources of funding is mainly the small funders that are still finalizing the funding. But as I say, where is the student now? Because given the institutions are front payments, the students are actually starting. There's no effect on the student. But the big one only to be confirmed is actually on the sitters. The Department of Higher Education and Training will probably elaborate on this question. The DHET has gone to the sitters to ask the sitters to assist in funding the unfunded students, the $2 billion that we spoke about, of shortfall. And the sitters have have been going to their own boards to ask for permission from their own boards to be able to find students, and that's why we're still having to be confirmed by the CEDA as well. The decision still have to be taken by the board of the CEDA so that the CEDA can then confirm funding. That's the biggest portion of to be confirmed. We're hoping that a big number will come out of the CEDAs all combined and be able to take a significant chunk of the funding shortfall. I'm talking about blacklisting. The issue of deserving and eligible. How we use the terms when we say deserving and eligible. The key criteria that we're using is actually both the financial need and academic performance. Because we need to find students that are progressing through the system so that they can graduate and assist their families. But also, this is a scheme for students that come from poor backgrounds, so that they are able, those families cannot afford it. That's why this deserving is a combination of these two things, the financial need and the academic performance. And continuing to refine it as to which one will have more weight than the other. This is a subject of policy discussion. Even if you're looking at poor students, there is ranking of being poor. There are those that are very poor. And sometimes it would be unfair to make them, if I come from a situation where I was studying with a candle in a shack, and you're studying with a bright lamp in a four-bedroom house, we're all poor. You know, to compare the results is probably not fair also. That's why there needs to be some balance as to who is, you know, how do we allocate the funding between these two. The 60-40, I just want to, the 60-40, how the 60-40 is, the 100% of the money comes from that part of the 60-40. The reason that there is this term 60-40 is because if you pass all your courses, 40% of your own is converted to a buyback. That's why we call it a 60-40. But all the money comes to you from NSFAS as a loan. We give you a loan. But the condition of the loan is you pass all your courses, 40% of your loan is converted to a buyback. Immediately you pass all your courses. And I also then deal with the president's announcement on financial program. The other people of the healthy that announced that the program is now on its third year of implementation. We started it in 2011. 2012 was second year. 2013 is now its third year. And if you remember my numbers, in this year we have allocated 1.1 billion. Last year we funded 28,000 students. Don't quote me on this number. Last year we funded 28,000 students under the final year. 29,000 under the final year funding. That's the number of beneficiaries in 2012. In 2011, I think it was 27,000 students that were funded under that program. It's going well. The middle income, or sometimes referred to as missing middle, and it's linked to how we're raising funding. Part of our key initiatives on the missing middle has been to look for a partner that we think will be interested in funding the middle income. And we looked around and we said the partner that we think would be interested is also the government employees pension fund. Because we looked at who is actually this middle income. This middle income is probably some of the government employees that are not earning a lot of money. And that money is actually sitting somewhere in Victoria with the government employees pension fund. We went to see them and said, hey, we have got this problem. And they actually said, the problem that you're actually putting on the table is also our problem. And we're actually grappling with it. And we're now trying to work together with the government employees pension fund to actually design a product that would fit the rules from both sides. Of course, the pensioners, they still want their money when they are old. But they still want to help their children now. If this is something that we need to balance between the needs of the pensioners and assisting the children of government employees now. And the GPF has got appetite to work with us. We trying to work on a product and design a product that will be able to help to help the medium income company. And we think once we've got something with the GPF, we may have then room to approach other union funds, because there's a whole lot of other funds that belong to the union, and this is where the net income is concentrated. They are members of this union investment fund, and that's the strategy that we are adopting in terms of the net income or the missing net income.
Thanks, Mshua. I'm going to try and answer the voucher question. I see there were a number of questions raised about the voucher.
Could you please switch off yours?
So there were a number of questions raised around the vouchers, and I'm going to try and cover it all up and build a picture for you, and then hopefully that will answer all of your questions. But it's interesting, the kind of points that you've raised, for example, around five students staying in one room, just to give you some ideas around some of the other things that we've come across in the times that we've been travelling around. We've come across students who get their full meal allowance on the first day of the year, going out, buying not one chicken leg for lunch, but buying 50 whole chickens, using their meal allowance up for nearly the whole year, and that becomes their business. We've come across students buying sugar, trolley loads of sugar, and taking it around, selling it at a sponsor shop on the corner to get the cash. We've come across accommodation where students will go and register for accommodation, and we'll share in the university of college will pay the money to the accommodation service provider and not split the money. The student will never stay there. We've come across and there's a case underway where we've got a service provider who is converting student loans, sorry, student advances to cash at a 25% charge. We've got cases of the transport allowance where paying in cash, but students will rather keep the cash and walk to campus. So the problem is big. We've said it's endemic, but I think the majority of students use the money as intended. So when we faced with that, we then looked at this from a holistic perspective and said, how do we deal with this? And the mechanisms of dealing with it are we thought, fourfold. We thought we either pay students cash, and we thought, no, that's probably not a good idea. We thought we would maybe use a procurement card, and we'd give the students a card that they could then spend at only certain places. And we thought, that's great, but there's a big cost involved in running the card. There's a cost to the student in terms of the transaction costs. And also it excludes the entire informal community because you've got to have a card swipe machine to be able to register that. So we thought that wasn't a good idea. We've seen some schemes where the universities or colleges provide a service. So for example, we've seen very successful institutions where they're providing a shuttle service, they're subcontracting that, and they're managing that. So there's no cash going to the student, but the college or university is providing that service. And then the final way we looked at is the mobile disbursement of funds using cell phone vouchers. And we worked on the basis that every student, or 98% of students, according to research, have got cell phones. The distribution of the voucher doesn't cost the student anything because it's an inbound SMS message to them, so there's no cost in transacting on the scheme. There's no transaction cost for them as well. And the fundamental principles that we applied to the disbursement of funds was to say, how do we ensure that the funds reach the intended beneficiaries timely so that they have accommodation, food, allowances for books, and accommodation as and when needed. And so we felt that if we could address that as part of this mobile payment system, we would cover off a lot of the issues that are currently being faced right now, and the solution will be ultimately much, much better than it currently is. And so we've worked on various things to say, how do we manage this? The first is we must disperse the money monthly so that the student doesn't get the full amount up front, and that we can, with a hand on our heart, say that the student was funded through the entire year of study. So that's for meals and accommodation. Obviously, appreciate needs to be paid up front, and so the book allowance would probably come at the beginning of the course of study. In terms of transport, it's a very difficult area. I mean, for us to engage with 1,600 taxi associations, all of the bus providers, etc., is going to be a challenge, and then we may need to resort to cash, or we may need to resort to the universities or colleges providing a shuttle service, and we think that's a neater way around it. But what you can see here is that there are 340 different ways of managing these allowances, and that's probably our biggest challenge, is to narrow that down to one way of doing it, which is consistent and which is really applied across all the campuses. In terms of us understanding then, all the allowances being spent appropriately, we understand that students will always try and find a way to get cash out of the system if they can. them, and so you won't be able to receive any of this best money. So you'll be excluded altogether. We are engaging with informals all the way through to the formals, so the likes of the Spar and Pick and Players and the ShopRites are all including this in their point of sale, and again we're saying that we don't want you to be selling students liquor, tobacco products, lottery products, etc. And we will rely on their training system to help police it for us. We'll also have to rely quite heavily on the universities and colleges in terms of some of the guidelines, for example, those guidelines currently issued by the department in terms of accommodation standards to be applied. We will rely to a certain extent on the universities and colleges to help us accredit merchants who are providing accommodation. In terms of whether a student drops off or not, I mean, it's very difficult for us sitting at NISFAS to know if a student has dropped off halfway through the year, and we are very reliant on the universities and colleges to provide that information to us. And in terms of the NISFAS Act, there is an obligation on the universities and colleges to timelessly provide that information, and we just have to carry on working with them to see if there are systems that they can put in place that will alert us to the fact that somebody has dropped out of the system. We can't read people's minds, and so we'll have to accept that until the end of that course of study, if we're not notified, we aren't going to know that information. I think that really covers off. I hope that gives you a sense, and I hope I've answered all your questions. I haven't put your hand up, so I can know. I hope that kind of answers the question and paints the picture for you.
Mr. Richard, I'm the chairperson. I will say they must put their hands up when you are the presenter.
The chairperson? Just in terms of the channels, I think that chairperson, your question around the use of channels is we recognize that the financial aid officers and the college financial officers are going to be our primary channel. Students are going to carry on going to them during the transition period. Over a period of time, we want to encourage students through advertising, through marketing campaigns, to go directly online. We recognize, however, that in a lot of the rural areas, they don't have facilities to go online. And so that's why we said the schools is the ideal next channel, and to get education through the schools and to get schools to assist us. We saw that the post office would be a good regional rural channel because they have access to technologies. And they can do one of two things. They can either then help us capture those application forms, or they can effectively pass them through to us to process centrally. So the point that you've made is very valid, and we've taken that on board, and that will be our primary focus in terms of channels. The others will be secondary focuses that will roll up over a period of time.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and my apologies for joining the presentation 15 minutes late. My flight was delayed at the last time. My name is Shane Makhova, and from the department, so I'll be responding to some of the key issues pertaining to the department. But also, I wear a NSFAS hat because I'm a departmental representative on the National Sport. Just starting with the issue of governance, I think the chairperson is being too modest, because if members remember is that we got a relatively new board, and when the minister intervened because he ultimately the buck stops with him, NSFAS might have an accounting authority, but he's the executive authority. When he intervened, we were, you know, criticized left, right, and center. We got quiet because we didn't want to engage in a public debate. And I think 3 years later, that intervention speaks for itself. And I'm going to be carrying the message back to the minister as well as the DG, and telling them that already some of the hard decisions, some of the interventions that we have to make at NSFAS are starting to pay more. And the deal in the department is that one complaint is one too many. We want a structure, and we want a NSFAS that will be very responsive in terms of student financial aid. And part of the reasons in terms of bringing a new board at NSFAS was to make sure that you not only bring in people with the right expertise, but you also bring in people that benefited from NSFAS. And some of us are here because we were funded by NSFAS. So you can rest assured that when we make decisions at a board level, it is the student that must benefit. We did not appoint board members who are going there just to line up their pockets. NSFAS as a public entity doesn't pay much in terms of board meeting attendance. So we make sure that we bring in people that will make a difference, understanding what it means for a poor student to be faced with a daunting task for the first year going to a university or an FET college. Because I think that is the greatest challenge, you know, first year entering students, and this is where we need to focus on. When we also look at our analysis, we see that there's still a lot that needs to be done in terms of first-time entering students. Some of them have even decided which program they want to study. And these are some of the inefficiencies that we also address, not only through NSFAS, but also through how we fund, you know, the post-school education system. The issue of accommodation, I'm going to remind the committee that last year, I think it was in September, the department came and made a presentation on student accommodation. And key among the recommendation was that we need to gazette a policy that will regulate student accommodation. I'm happy to announce that the policy has been gazetted and that the comments, thank you, and we have invited comments until 10 May. But we felt this is way too important. So the minister in his budget speech, in his media address, extended the deadline to 30 June. So the policy has been segregated quite extensively, you know, not only your universities, because it was largely around universities. And this is where I'm trying to link with the FET colleges, because it's no use for the colleagues who are responsible in the FET branch to reinvent the wheel when another section within the same department has had a comprehensive policy. So what we're talking about is that the same policy at a later stage will be aligned in terms of the accommodation requirements at FET colleges. Because there's a lot that can be led in terms of that policy. It was specifically emanating as a result of the review that happened at the university. But accommodation at FET college, a university, I mean, it should be more or less standardized. And that policy will ensure that we have accredited service providers. And we've also shared that with NSFAS to say, in terms of accommodation, you must also look into this policy and make sure that if you'll be paying direct accommodation to service providers, make sure that those service providers are accredited. Of course, this is not going to happen overnight. It's a process. But what I'd like to confirm to the committee is that already the process is unfolding. And one thing that I also, I think, executive officer, I think the issue of executive officer and CEO is also a good concern, not only to members, but also in the executive officer, but in essence we mean CEO. But the point is that even the executive officer is a NSFAS recipient. So it's not only the board members, but it's also some of the executive at NSFAS. So you can see that we're hoping to learn from various experiences so that, you know, we can make sure that NSFAS is an entity that we need to be proud of. Our DD and minister refer to NSFAS as a crown jewel in the department. It's because of the importance it plays. The DD of National Treasury is also a NSFAS recipient. The DD of Home Affairs is also a NSFAS recipient. And I think at some stage, NSFAS needs to write a story about some of its past beneficiaries and the role that they play in this economy. I think that's a story that NSFAS must tell at some stage. In terms of the blacklisting, I think the CEO touched on that because it emanated. But we also wanted to understand where this issue of blacklisting comes from. So, because NSFAS is a registered credit provider, the issue of compliance is also central in terms of how it does its business. Because one of the issues that we constantly face, and particularly that end up in my desk, is that you get students that, for some reason, in terms of academic eligibility, because academic eligibility is also central, when you get a student that has been fined for 1 year, and that student fails out of the 8 programs, the question is, do we still need to keep on funding the students? In terms of the NSFAS criteria, absolutely not. And I can assure members that most of the complaints that we receive are from students. They might be from informed backgrounds, but the point is that terms of its administration. So we must be careful that sometimes when we get the stories about some students that cannot be funded, we go beyond the surface, we investigate, and that's what we do with the department. This, of course, in a number of cases where you find that either the FTQ college or the universities were unfair, and we do intervene there and say, we've looked at the academy because we've got a very good working relationship with all institutions. Once the students start complaining, the first thing that we do is to ask for an academic record. The second thing to do is to ask for the NSFAS application so that we get to see why the student was rejected. And we do investigate, and there's a number of cases, very few cases, where either the college or the institution was wrong in its application of the NSFAS. But in the main, it's students that either do not meet the eligibility criteria. And another element that we're talking about in terms of the missing middle is that I think we need to also educate, you know, some of us, you know, some of us middle class citizens that it would be unfair if I've got the means to pay for my kid at university or FET college to be expecting NSFAS to also foot the bill because I'm too worried about paying for my BMW installment. And we're getting some of these cases around those where, you know, parents are really not making financial decisions that are in the best interest of their children because NSFAS is meant for financially poor and working class students from those households. So I think we need to be vigilant in terms of some of these issues that, you know, and the department supports, you know, the process, the transformation process at NSFAS. And the minister specifically approved a budget of 98 million to have this transformation. So NSFAS presented to the minister and said, this is the step in the right direction. I'm also going to make sure that there is sufficient funding to see this through. The five-year program, I think it has been addressed by the executive officer, but one thing that you also forget to mention is that this is also a priority program, not only for the department, but for NSFAS, with the result that NSFAS also puts in some of the recoveries to augment what the fiscal has provided. And one thing that we need to acknowledge is that the support, financial support from the fiscal has been quite generous over the last years, but it's still not enough to meet the ever-increasing demand on student financial aid. With the result that NSFAS is now beginning to use some of these recoveries to augment the final year program because what we get from the FISCAS is not enough. I think this year NSFAS will be putting just about 400 million just on recoveries to augment the final year program. So it is a good program, but from where we sit, it's not been sufficiently funded. And it has benefited quite a lot, as the executive officer mentioned. The issue of the sit-ups, I can confirm that 15 of the sit-ups have already indicated in writing, and some have already signed service level agreements or memorandum of agreements with NSFAS. To date, 301 million has been committed by 15 sit-ups. It's new, this is all new. And I think it's not only the intervention of the department and the minister, but also the NSFAS board in terms of exploring, you know, other means of ensuring that. One other thing that we must do is to consolidate all government funding, because we want all government departments and entities to come and use NSFAS as a disbursement agent, rather than for them to build up their own internal capacities and start dishing out financial aid. Because there could be also the issue of WDP. And we're also starting to work quite closely with the NRF, the National Research Foundation, because they also fund postgraduate students, and NSFAS last year began funding postgraduate students. So we need to ensure that there's proper alignment in some of the different funding agencies by governments. The issue of cost allocations, particularly rollovers, we've made it clear to NSFAS that for DHET in particular funding, there should be no rollover, because we realize that when it comes to other funders, they have their own selection criteria, and therefore NSFAS has very little here and say this particular government department is not doing well in terms of identifying enough beneficiaries. NSFAS must engage with this, all funders, build a relationship, identify some of the inefficiencies so that at the end of the financial year we can disperse all funds. And already some of those relationships have been built, particularly with the Department of Basic Education. We've already built a good working relationship. We meet on a quarterly basis, NSFAS, the department, and the two departments meet on a quarterly basis, and we address the issue of inefficiencies. So there is a lot that is happening behind the scenes, you know, in terms of ensuring that we can present to Parliament that
we sorry, you have only 1 minute left.
Chairperson, I think with that minute, I'd like to thank the committee, you know, for acknowledging that, you know, through your engagement, you've seen some of the improvements, and to say we really appreciate that, and thank you very much.
Thanks to the NSFAS team. Honourable members, we are, this committee has a lot of weeks that are going to the other meeting at 12:30. I think we don't have time. I will only allow each member to ask one short question. No, I'm not going to allow comments. I'm going to allow questions. Very short.
Thank you.
can see that we still have more questions. I think the members would like to hear them from you, and I will ask the chairperson and the committee and the committee secretary to make time, arrange time on this very same presentation. We will also have maybe additional questions that will come forward. So could you please respond to the issues that the members have so that we have up?
I'm aware that the discussions in this committee are public record. So one thing that I'd like to rectify is that the example given by the Deputy Minister was in relation to North Link College. North Link Deputy College. So I think he referred to last day, if I'm not mistaken, but the specific example was in relation to North Link. But I think the problems within the sector are more or less the same. Thank you.
Also, I respond on the social question. I think we'll just engage with the department because they're the ones that decide on the allocation, the demand of social development. They decide on the allocation as to how much should be allocated for Kazakhs. We'll just engage them as we provide information, also provide that short answer that we'll get from the department.
Yeah, the Quintal question, was why the Quintal Street is good, but I think the purpose on the slide was really to indicate the work effort that goes, the unnecessary work effort that goes into the means test. So, for example, there's a cost to the institution for carrying out the means test. There's a cost to the applicant who has to travel long distances and obtain all sorts of documentation to support the means test. And I was merely indicating that it was a wasted effort if we look at it from a logical perspective. And if you wanted to extend that, we can say quite safely that if you're receiving a social grant, if you were fee-waived in a quintile 4 or quintile 5 school, or in quintile 1, quintile 2, or quintile 3 school, which are all fee-waived, you could just as easily exclude the means test. So, just by way of example.
Thank you. Chairperson, last year, our transformation work, when it's implemented fully, is going to target students from grade. So all schools of South Africa will be covered by this model. So that is why we are no longer worried now for people telling us I'm in the rural of the rural. We will be right there in any school targeting from grade 9. So when they get their decision, our advocacy will get down. So we're building our capacity so as to access the whole South Africa in terms of those schools. We might be talking about regional offices, but the target are those schools, the learners themselves. They must know about NSFAS before they can join any university, any FET college. That is our approach. In those words, Sebastian, thank you very much. If there are still more questions, I used to hear questions before, but today,
because you are an institution that has been established when he left today, the committee. Thank you very much. We will keep on engaging each other in everything that we come across as members. Thank you, members, and thank you to our officials, the Secretary.
Thank you.